Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Daniel Webster, Professor of Health Policy and Management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, where he serves as Director of the Center for Gun Policy and Research, Deputy Director of Research for the Center for the Prevention of Youth Violence, and Director of the PhD Program in Health and Public Policy. He's the lead author of a study from the Journal of Urban Health that provides evidence of how the repeal of Missouri's background check law led to an increase in the state's murder rate. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daniel Webster.
Thanks for having me.
And the former mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, has announced that he's going to pour $50 million into promoting gun sense. He's restructuring the gun control groups that he already funds, Mayors Against Illegal Guns and Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. And they'll be brought together under a new umbrella group called Every Town for Gun Safety. So what's your sense, since you're there at the mayor's alma mater and he's poured a lot of money into Johns Hopkins? So what's your sense of how you're going forward here?
Well, I'll just be clear from the outset that even though I work for the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, Michael Bloomberg does not pay my salary and nor involve me in his decision-making relevant to his advocacy on this issue. Because we do generate research that is designed to inform gun policy, he and his group, of course, are very interested in our research findings. So, in my opinion, it's no secret that Michael Bloomberg is reducing gun violence is at the top or near the top of his many issues that he cares about deeply. And so, to me, I'm not surprised that he's decided to invest in this. He's contributed money in the past to a variety of different groups working on this issue. I think what he's trying to do, of course, is to level the playing field that we've had for decades, of course, in the United States, the gun lobby, the most powerful force, of course, being the National Rifle Association, has played an outsized role in shaping our gun policy, given that its views are quite at odds with the public overall, and even gun owners or even their own members on many key issues, perhaps most important being background checks. So, I think that what this organization is trying to do is to mobilize this large majority so that they care as deeply as a very small group that's been able to dictate gun policy for so long.
So in trying to outmuscle the NRA, which its political action committee spent more than $16 million in the 2012 election cycle, and it's raised more than $13.7 million already in 2014 and spent only a fraction of that, it's worth pointing out that much of the NRA's money comes from the gun and ammunition manufacturers, and that it does try to portray itself as a grassroots American movement, but it's essentially a lobbying group, is it not, for gun and ammunition manufacturers?
Well, there's no question in my mind that the gun industry plays a very large role in shaping what the National Rifle Association does. There certainly are a very committed group of gun owners themselves who agree with and support the policies of that organization. So it's not as though there's no grassroots support. But it's very interesting in surveys that we've done, but surveys that many different organizations have done over time. There is a very, very large gap between what your average gun owner wants and supports for gun policy and the policies of the NRA and what they support. The way I would characterize that generally is that very large majorities of gun owners support policies to keep guns out of the wrong hands, out of the hands of dangerous people. It's not a particular controversial thing for them, the idea that you would require background checks, that you would prohibit certain groups from possessing firearms and put the necessary regulation in place to keep guns from them. The thing that, you know, types of policies that gun owners don't support are, you know, bans, assault weapon bans, or restrictions on concealed carry. But the kind of policies that are designed to keep guns out of the hands of criminals and other dangerous people, which from my following of mayors against illegal guns, because it's been in place for a longer time, that has been the area of their focus and interest. And I suspect that this grassroots group will, you know, they read the opinion polls. They know what policies have the biggest support. So I suspect that they're going to focus most of their energies on where this grassroots movement is, which is they want policies to keep guns from dangerous people.
Again, I'm speaking with Daniel Webster, the professor of health policy and management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, where he serves as director of the Center for Gun Policy and Research, deputy director of research for the Center for the Prevention of Youth Violence, and director of the PhD program in health and public policy. He's the lead author of a study from the Journal of Urban Health that provides evidence of how the repeal of Missouri's background check law led to an increase in the state's murder rate. Now, in terms of background checks, which certainly do have a lot of popular appeal, nevertheless, the NRA was able to spend enough money to get rid of the president of Colorado's Senate, John Morse. They recalled him over his support for background checks and limiting magazine capacity. So the message, I mean, it's clear that he could have done with some more support from the gun control or the gun sense people now. I guess that's the new way of framing it, right? It's not about gun control, which obviously raises hackles. Yeah. It's about common sense.
Exactly. I think language is very important here, how you characterize these policies. I have to say it sort of rankles me when I read in the media when people talk about background checks as gun restrictions. Well, what's being restricted is the people who already prohibit are being restricted because they have to have a background. You know, background checks keeps the guns from them. But something like background checks is common sense. So we need new ways to talk about, you know, things like background checks as being very distinct and different from any kind of ban, for example.
Well, we already have, I mean, I don't know how much more evidence you can get. And, you know, the president was obviously, and the Democrats simply couldn't remain silent after the Newtown massacre. They've avoided talking about gun control or even gun safety. Obviously, you've got a lot of these senators in like Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, Mark Begich in Alaska, Mark Pryor in Arkansas, who definitely have to sing the NRA's tune, otherwise they get booted out. And then on the Republican side, only four Republican senators voted for background checks. That's Pat Toomey, John McCain, Susan Collins, and Mark Kirk. So the NRA certainly got pretty much the entire Republican Party in their pocket, and they've cowered a few Democrats. But, for example, just a couple of days ago, a neo-Nazi with an extraordinarily long record of violence and stealing high-powered, heavy military weapons from U.S. armories, etc., he, through a straw purchase, got a gun that killed. He tried to shoot up a Jewish community center in Kansas and ended up killing some Christian visitors to the center. You know, to me, it's just piling on. The evidence is so overwhelming. But how come it never quite breaks through the overall consciousness of the country that there are simply people out there that should not have access to firearms?
Well, I actually do think that there is a consensus that certain people should not have firearms. And I actually also think there's a consensus that we should have common sense things like background checks for all gun sales. I think where things sort of get off the rails, we get distracted, frankly, because the gun lobby is particularly adept at, in essence, changing the subject. And it plays right into many formulaic media responses to this issue, because they want to hype up the controversy and say, and underscore a cultural conflict. Again, this sort of classic pro and anti-gun portrayal of the issue. But in my opinion, it's not a pro and anti-gun kind of thing, because the vast majority of gun owners support something like background checks. So I think it's we're in a bit of a rut where we keep talking about this in not particularly productive ways, in which we lose sight of what the issue is. Is the issue, are guns good or bad? No, I don't think that's really the issue. I think the issue is what policies should we put in place to reduce gun violence and keep guns from dangerous people. It doesn't have to be a pro and anti-gun kind of debate. And I think if the new group that's being formed now sort of sticks to that and doesn't get sucked into the cultural war dimension to this, I think in the long term they'll probably be successful.
So when Mayor Bloomberg, in launching this new effort, this $50 million effort called Every Town for Gun Safety, in launching the effort, he said, this is not a battle of dollars. This is a battle for the hearts and minds of America so that we can protect our children, protect innocent people. If you take a look at the number of people who use illegal guns to commit suicide, the number of people that are killed every year, we're the only civilized country in the world that has this problem. Very rational, reasonable, but sometimes, you know, by simply being rational and reasonable in the tradition of the Enlightenment, the Age of Enlightenment, the argument is sometimes that because you make the reasonable and rational argument, you assume that you've won, but you haven't won, right?
No, you're absolutely right. So I think, again, this is going to require time, a new way of thinking about how to address this. Again, I think we don't have big social change that occurs, you know, that things change immediately. But I sense that after the horrific tragedy in Newtown, that far more people are engaged in reforming policies to make our communities safer, reforming gun policies. And so I am guardedly optimistic that we can start to talk about and think about this problem a little bit differently and more productively.
And in terms of the intersection between mental illness and easy access to weaponry, I mean, the strongest arguments to my mind is that argument, the argument that America has the most heavily armed, sophisticatedly armed criminals in the world, that, you know, there's absolutely, the police are outgunned in this country. It's a phenomenon that no other country has this situation where criminals can purchase military-style weapons or find them one way or the other. That seems to be a strong argument. So how do you rate these arguments in terms of, again, you know, breaking through that idea that just because you are rational and reasonable doesn't mean you're going to win the argument?
I think it comes down to trust, honestly. I think that the NRA has been successful in large part because they've instilled fear in people. They've instilled fear relevant to crime and criminals, but perhaps far more importantly, they've instilled fear of what it means to regulate guns. They have been convinced that something as simple as a background check is simply a ploy to take away everyone's guns. And, you know, there's just a lot of distrust in this country now of government. And, again, there's a cultural and political divide that's been growing. And it's not simply a gun-related thing, but the NRA takes advantage of that, takes advantage of people's distrust of government, and ties that to the reasonable types of regulations over firearms. So, you know, I think part of this is not only convincing people that these policies can work, which again I think is a barrier. The NRA has been somewhat successful in convincing people that it's impossible to keep guns from dangerous people, that the criminals are always going to find their ways to get guns. Well, that's just simply not true. Yes, there are some criminals who will be very resourceful and determined to arm themselves, even when there are strong gun laws. But the fact of the matter is a lot of criminals do not have a lot of resources, do not necessarily have the connections, and do not want to risk breaking law and going to jail. So there's a number of hurdles to get over. One is sort of this disbelief that it can work, but then secondly, that you can regulate guns and not threaten lawful gun ownership. I think that's sort of the bottom line.
Well, you do have this disconnect, if not hypocrisy, where the red states and the rural states that are vehemently in support of gun rights, with the notion that the government's going to take their guns away, and yet they live in states where there's little crime, little need for guns in the sense that you need to defend yourself. But they're also, these states are the source of most of the gun running that takes place, that guns come from these red states, go into these big urban centers where the real shooting takes place and the real casualties takes place. So, you know, urban America is suffering because of rural America's, you know, hypocrisy.
Well, there's certainly a connection between where the guns are coming from, those being places that have the weakest gun laws, and where they commonly are used, which you're right, is more urban areas. And that underscores why it's particularly important to have federal laws. You know, I'm trying to be guardedly optimistic. My hope is that I grew up in a small town in a rural community in Kentucky. I don't think that everybody's of one mind on guns and responsible gun ownership and things like that. So my hope is that, again, you can break through this distrust and have people accept common sense, reasonable regulations that won't threaten their ability to possess firearms, and in essence sort of take some responsibility for what happens to the guns that are initially sold in your own state.
Well, Daniel Webster, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Daniel Webster, who's a professor of health policy and management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, where he serves as director of the Center for Gun Policy and Research, deputy director of research for the Center for the Prevention of Youth Violence, and director of the PhD program in health and public policy. He's the lead author of a study from the Journal of Urban Health that provides evidence of how the repeal of Missouri's background check law led to an increase in the state's murder rate. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graeme Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.